I'm sorry this morning I seem to have a, a cough that wouldn't bother me that much in class, but seems to get to me now. So I'm sorry for that. Exodus, the 20th chapter. Exodus, the 20th chapter. It's good to be with you again. We've got a beautiful day in which to come together to worship God. I thank you for your presence, and I hope you've been blessed so far in our assembly and in our coming together this morning. We've been talking about the Ten Commandments for the last few weeks, and we come this morning to the ninth commandment, in which Moses writes, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." Neighbor is a very general term. It can mean an acquaintance, it can mean an associate, or something that we generally would involve ourselves in is knowing somebody. You don't necessarily have to be kin to them or live next door to them, but it is a general term. And sometimes they transpose the sentence in a way that you shall not against your neighbor bear false witness. And sometimes we just say, just don't lie. That's probably the way we'd say it. But it's interesting, if you look at different translations of it, how it does sort of spread the thought out as to how we're to guard ourselves and what we say, not just to the person next door, but to all people. Be careful of what we say and what we do. Certainly it's one of the plain commandments, not as short as the one we looked at a couple of weeks ago, you shall not steal. That's pretty short. I think that's the shortest one, I think. But this one has a few more words in it and uses some ideas about the idea of giving testimony. Some translations say instead of false witness, they say false testimony. And that is conveying or telling someone something that is just not the truth under any circumstances. And that is the problem that we face in our life. The Ten Commandments are explicit statements as you read down through them. They just, verse 3, you shall have no other gods before you, or you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, or honor father and mother. They are explicit statements made to a nation of people to impress upon them the importance of these laws. And sometimes, like you look in verse 8, 9, 10, and 11. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. He explains it a little more, but just remember the Sabbath and keep it holy is pretty straightforward. And as we have said several times, as we get further into it, I think our last lesson will be what Jesus was saying over in Matthew 22. When someone asked him, what was the greatest commandment? And of course, you remember what that was. And he just simply answered, you shall love the Lord thy God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And he says, on these two hangs the whole law. The whole law hangs on our respect and honor and affection for others and the way we treat it. We'll talk about that more when we get over there. So the whole law rested in our respect and honor of God and of our neighbor and the people that we deal with every day. Look with me over in Luke, the 6th chapter. In Luke 6, we read where there's a very important thought here with regard to this idea of not just bearing false doctrine or false testimony or making some sort of false statement or being a false witness to something. When you read, beginning with me in verse 43, Luke, the 6th chapter, down to verse 43. For a good tree does not bear bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. For every tree is known by its own fruit. For men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they gather grapes from a bramble bush. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. Whether we like it or not, or whether we want to know it or not, our words betray our thoughts. Our words betray our character. And we sometimes don't appreciate that as much as we should. When he talks about a good tree does not bear bad fruit, we understand that. And he makes the point that in verse 45, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good. What is good comes from a good heart, and what is evil comes from an evil heart. And out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. That is so very important. Because what we say to somebody at some particular place is also being heard by God, and it is mindful to us in our memory of what we are. Remember in the Old Testament, Proverbs 23 and verse 7, "For as he thinketh in his heart, so he is." Our character is determined or manifested by the how we speak and what we do with our language. If we're there in Luke, the 6th chapter, look with me over at Matthew, the 12th chapter, something along the same lines, but a little more serious, I would think. In Matthew 12, and we read verse 36, Jesus said, "But I say to you that every idle word men may speak, they will give an account of it on the day of judgment." Verse 37, "For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." And that makes it extremely important when we think about what Jesus is saying about the way we speak and what our words portray about our character. They become very important about how we conduct ourselves in talking with anybody, family members, our neighbors, somebody that we would just happen to meet, or with God. So I just wanted to kind of generalize it out a little bit. Just talk about, do not lie. Do not be somebody who gives false testimony for any occasion. We don't want to mistreat or mislead somebody, because we wouldn't want them to do that to us. But our speech is important, because he's talking about, by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. So let me suggest a couple of things that I think are important too. We've got to be honest with God. When he says, do not bear false witness against your neighbor, we recognize God's a witness to that. And it's important, because God is hearing what we just read here in Matthew, the 12th chapter, about how we conduct ourselves. Look with me back in Psalms, the 50th chapter. In Psalms, the 50th chapter, he talks about the person, well, we can't read all of it, but begin in about verse 16, Psalms, the 50th chapter, and about verse 16. But to the wicked, God says, "What right have you to declare my statutes or take my covenant in your mouth, seeing you hate instruction and cast my words behind you? When you saw a thief, you consented with him. You have been a partaker with adulterers. You give your mouth to evil, and your tongue frames deceit. You sit and speak against your brother and slander your own mother's sons. These things you have done, and I kept silent. You thought that I was altogether like you, but I will rebuke you and set them in order before your eyes." Old Testament is just as powerful as the New Testament about our speech and how we should conduct ourselves and how we should be very careful, because there is a witness in heaven that we're going to have to deal with, and it is God. You recall in 1 Samuel, I just quote the verse to read the verse to you. 1 Samuel 16, verse 7, "For the Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." God is aware of not only what we think, but what we say, because what we're saying is really what we're saying. We're either saying something we want to say, or we're not saying what we know is the truth and trying to cover it up. And yet God is aware of that. If you're in Psalms 50 with me, look up to another passage, Psalms 139. There's another passage there where David's talking about God's knowledge of him. Psalms 139. And begin Well, let's just begin in verse 1. Psalms 139, verse 1. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. Verse 3. You comprehend my path and my lying down, and you are acquainted with all my ways. Verse 4. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it all together. You have hedged me behind and before and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? God knows it. God knows us. He knows our thoughts when it comes to our tongue to speak it. And he is aware of that. And he is aware of our intent. He knows everything. We can't surprise him with what we would say. We can't shock him or catch him off guard or catch him unawares. He is knowledgeable of and aware of everything that he said. And if God's knowledge is such, and these are just two passages we read, Psalms 15, Psalms 139, if God's knowledge is such, why would we bother to ever conceal the truth when we're called upon to speak the truth? There's no reason for it. And even as you read, well, go back with me with Acts in the New Testament. In Acts, the fifth chapter, there was a couple, a man and wife, Ananias and Sapphira, and they tried to lie to God, and God struck them dead, didn't he? He was aware of what they had done, and on that occasion, for some reason, in those set of ingredients of the situation, God struck them dead for lying. An amazing thought. And we read this in the first few verses there, and we might be shocked at it. But yet, this is the severity of the very truth of God. We've been talking in 1 John, the first chapter, and we're into the second chapter now. But back in the first chapter, 1 John, we read in verse 10. 1 John 1, verse 10. If we say we have not sinned, we make him a liar, and his word is not in us. We don't want to act and conduct ourselves in such a way that we would make God a liar. If you're there in 1 John with me, look over in 1 John, the fifth chapter, and we read down at verse 10. He says, he who believes in the Son of God has the witness in himself, and he who does not believe God has made him a liar because he has not believed the testimony that God has given to him. And that's getting closer to it. If we'll not accept the testimony of Christ and recognize and be convicted of who the Son of God is, we're making God a liar. That's not what we want. We don't want to be guilty of that. And yet that's the truth of what happens as you read through the Bible. He doesn't forgive or cleanse excuses. He doesn't take that. He doesn't forgive cover-ups. He forgives and cleanses sin that is honestly brought to him and confessed, and he will do such. Let us be careful in our speech, because there is one listening more than probably those in the conversation. But let me suggest to you, secondly, let's be honest with others. And I think most of the time when you read the ninth commandment, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, that's what we're thinking of and what we're talking about. Isn't it true that once a person lies and it comes out that they have just told a lie, you take everything they say afterwards with a grain of salt, don't you? And we almost live in a society where you have to take everything that everybody says today with a grain of salt. I mean, even when they're telling the truth, you know what they're capable of, and in certain circumstances, they are capable of doing away with anything that is right. Aristotle was asked one time, what does a person gain by telling a lie? I thought it was just such an interesting answer. He said, not to be credited for the rest of their life, even when they shall tell the truth. And there's a lot that just such a great point that I would think about. If we become known as betrayers of truth or not supporting the truth, honesty is the very basis of trust. And we should understand that. And that's one of the most important things about this law, this ninth commandment being given by God to the people of Israel at that time, is that the idea of trust between neighbors or associates in some way. Let's be people who speak the truth and are credited with being honest in dealing with people. Look with me back to Isaiah 59. We are familiar in the first couple of verses in Isaiah 59 about where sin separates us from God. Just continue with me after this. Isaiah 59 in the first, begin with verse 1. Isaiah 59 verse 1, behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, nor his ear heavy that it cannot hear. But your iniquities have separated you from your God, and your sins have hidden his face from you, so he will not hear. For your hands are defiled with blood, your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue has muttered perversity. No one calls for justice, nor does any plead for truth. They trust in empty words and speak lies. They conceive evil and bring forth iniquity. And most of the time when you read the first two verses there, you just simply realize, well, sin separates us from God. That's true. But actually, the application he's making is right down to individual day-to-day life of what goes on between people. The idea that he says they have spoken lies, their fingers and your fingers with iniquity, and your hands have shed blood. And he's talking about how they conduct their life every single day. And a lot of it has to do with their inability to be people of truth. But that's why it's so important that in the eyes of God, we would always tell the truth, or as we're talking about in here in the 20th chapter of Exodus, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. In plain English, again, do not lie. Don't be that kind of person that would betray confidences. Be a person, when they speak, they're speaking honestly and in dealing with people. It doesn't only apply to what we say. It also applies to what we do, and where we go, and how we conduct ourselves, how we act. For instance, maybe writing a hot check or something like that. The deception is there, and we have to be concerned about that. And he's not talking about betraying secrets. He's not betraying confidences. He's not talking about gossiping. He is talking about being people who can be depended upon to tell the truth. Well, let me suggest to you this last of all then, let's be honest with ourselves. Trouble with being honest with God is that because we're not honest with ourselves so many times. And that's the difficulty when we think about God and what difficult circumstances put us into when we don't mingle or converse with people as we should. In Ephesians, the 4th chapter in verse 29, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. It's hard for us as people, we make mistakes. It's hard for us to admit faults or maybe admit a weakness or a failing. And it takes courage to tell the truth. It's very difficult. It's hard to say that I have enough humility to stand up and make something right and the inner strength to do with that. I think of the whole ugly scene with David and Bathsheba, and all of the problems and troubles that he created. He just completely squandered his entire measurement of his administration. He had a man actually kill a dependable soldier. He committed adultery. It just went on and on in the lies. And finally, as you recall, Nathan has to come to him and he has to tell him this story. And David understands the story perfectly well until and when Nathan has to say, "You're the man." And David has to admit, "I have sinned. I was the one. I was wrong." Every person has done wrong. Everyone's committed sin. We all have. We need to come to God honestly and be before God honestly that I need His forgiveness and His understanding. So many times we seem to think we can outsmart everything and everyone. When we come to God, we must deny ourselves. To deny self is to be honest with self. John 14:6, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Jesus is the truth. He's the one we have to deal with. He's the one we have to bear with. And He's the one we're going to answer to when we talk about just these simple laws that most people walking down the street know the Ten Commandments. They said, "Thou shalt not commit or bear false witness against thy neighbor." They know this. They understand it. We must have a love for the truth. In John 8, in verse 32, Jesus makes a statement about His disciples. He says in John 8, in verse 32, verse 31, there we go, 31 and 32. Then Jesus said to those Jews who believed Him, "If you abide in My word, you're My disciples indeed. If you abide in My word, you're My disciples indeed." Disciples, learners, followers, students would be a good word for that. You truly are. If you abide in My word, verse 32, "and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The point is, so many times we're afraid to deal honestly with our part with the truth of God that would allow us to stand and be people of truth. In Romans 8, we read in verse 29, He makes the statement there. He says, "For whom He foreknew, He predestined to be conformed to the image of His Son, that we might be the firstborn among many brethren." We must live for the truth of what Jesus was and why He came. Let me suggest to you Philippians, the fourth chapter, in verse 8. He says, "Finally, brethren," He says, "whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of a good report, if there's any virtue, and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. The things which you've learned and received and heard and saw in Me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you." We have to live a life, and we're going to have to be honest with ourselves if we're going to be honest with everybody else. And one day we will be honest with God. Look with me in Romans, the 12th chapter. He's talking about how we live our life there. And again, he says, "I beseech you." Here's the apostle begging the brethren of Rome. He says, "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may approve what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God." Change your life. Transform your life that you may do what? That you may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God. The only way we can live a life that is acceptable to God is to transform our life in the service of God. We're going to have to be people not only that tell the truth, but we're going to have to be people of the truth. That is, it describes our very life. We must walk in the truth. We must walk in the light. It's what we've been studying in class for the last few weeks. Exodus 20 and verse 16. "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." And if you would bear it against your neighbor, you'd probably lie to anybody, including yourself. It's a very straightforward command and one that stands today and through the teachings of Christ in Matthew 22, which we'll deal with in a couple of weeks. you're here this morning, you're not a member of the body of Christ, you need to recognize there is a part of the Bible that is very demanding of the way you will live your life, and that is the truth. We will walk in truth in a certain way. And sometimes we lose sight of that. And I think we live in a society where the truth is just something. But we live in a society in which truth is almost negotiable. And I hate that idea. Excuse me for messing it up today. I'm sorry about that. But if you're here this morning, you're not a child of God, I extend to you heaven's invitation. It is one to learn the truth, to obey the truth, to think the truth, and in all occasions, to be willing to understand that I live my life in the very presence of God at all times. And one day I will stand before Him and answer. If you haven't obeyed the gospel of Christ, we extend the opportunity and the occasion to confess Christ and be baptized into Christ. If you're here this morning and you haven't done that, we ask you to come as we stand and sing.